All right, welcome back. It's Afternoons with Amos. I'm Amos Brown. It is WTLC AM Indianapolis. And Afternoons with Amos continues our coverage of the 2012 election with a debate between the candidates for Indiana's 7th Congressional District between incumbent Congressman Andre Carson and challenger Carlos May. The redrawn 7th District consists of Center, Wayne, Warren, Decatur, Perry, and Franklin townships, plus neighborhoods in the other three townships of our city county, including all of Lawrence Township, south of Fort Harrison and 56th Street, including the Devon and Devington areas. In Washington Township, it includes the Meadows, the area around the fairgrounds, Butler Tarkington, beautiful Rocky Ripple, and the Michigan and Knowlton Road corridors. And in Pike Township, it includes the Guyon, Georgetown, and Lafayette Road corridors, and all the way over to Eagle Creek Airport. Our debate takes place in our brand new formal conference room here at WTLC Radio 1, and our debate today is patterned after the rules and guidelines used by the Indiana Debate Commission. Now, in our debate, each candidate is going to have up to 90 seconds, that's a minute and a half, to respond to the question. Then their opponent will have 30 seconds in rebuttal. The questions have been selected by me in part from those submitted by you, our listeners. No one has seen or heard the questions until the candidates and you listening hear them in a moment. A couple of weeks ago, a coin toss determined the order of questions and the order of opening and closing statements, which will be 2 minutes for each candidate. And my role today is just as a moderator. I'm not Jim Lehrer and I'm not Candy Crowley. I'm just me. And so the more time that we spend focused on keeping time and moving forward, the more the people of the 7th District can hear where both of you stand. With that, we begin with opening statements and Congressman Carson.
Dr. Brown, thank you for allowing me to come here, Radio 1, 1310 The Light, and thank you, Mr. Carlos May, for taking the time out for us to have this important forum. I've worked hard, not because of what I thought I would get out of it, but because I grew up here. It's my home. The people here are my neighbors, my friends, and my family. I've listened to their concerns, and I've taken their voices to work with me each and every day. Now, I know that a lot of folks in Indiana are unemployed and underemployed and struggling. So my main goal has been to create jobs and to make life a lot easier for Hoosiers. I voted for a tax cut, Amos, that would provide tax relief for 95% of working Hoosier families. I defended child and family nutrition to make sure that the hardest hit are taken care of. I supported recovery measures that put Hoosiers back to work. I also supported measures that would help keep Allison Transmission employees to have their jobs, and we voted to keep IPS teachers in the classrooms. We've hosted several job fairs where Hoosiers were hired directly on the spot. I voted to expand free preventive care, which improves public health and saves us money long term. Now, I fought hard and rigorously in Washington, D.C. because I believe that Indiana and the 7th Congressional District deserves the best. Since I've been in the office, I've been able to bring back over $500 million to the 7th Congressional District, and two of my pieces of legislation have been signed by President Obama with under a year. So, I'm honored to be here. And I ask the voters to listen carefully to what we have to say, and I hope that you give me the honor of serving you for an additional term. Thank you, Amos.
Mr. May.
Well, as the congressman said, first off, thank you to everyone for coming out today, and thank you to those taking some time out of your days to listen on the radio. I appreciate the opportunity, and I hope that you will like what I've got to say in the next hour. I'd like to really hone in on three main things. There's job creation. Job creation is one of the most important duties that we have as congressmen. But the point that we need to understand is that government does not create jobs. Government creates the environment that allows small and medium-sized and large businesses to create jobs, to expand their businesses, and really to feed this economy. The federal government needs to intervene less and do more to get out of the way of the country's economic engine. So I will support policies that will grow the economy and create jobs through small business regulatory reform, tax code reform, strengthening our manufacturing center. Indiana is a huge manufacturing state. And supporting an energy policy that supports diversification of what we have in terms of our energy producing abilities. Now, aside from that, as I said, energy is important. That was the last point. We need more energy choice. This is very important. Things like solar, wind, coal, gas, oil. These are important because expanded choices lead to reduced costs. And what that means is that your heating bill this winter will go up or down depending on how your representative votes. Mr. Carson has voted to increase your energy costs by voting against such things as cap and trade and small business regulatory reform. Now, the final point, and I believe it's the most important point, accessibility. The definition of the job is within the title of the job. You are a representative. That means that you need to be out there listening to what the people have to say. I will pledge right now to hold a town hall every month, one in each of the townships. That would be 12 throughout the course of the year. I'll have congressional liaisons to attend your neighborhood association meetings when I cannot. And we will have a mobile constituent van.
Time.
Thank you.
Thank you. First question goes to Congressman Carson. One quarter of the 285,000 households in the 7th District receive Social Security benefits. How do we make sure that those benefits will be there, not just for those 25%, but for the remaining 75% when they become eligible?
First, let me say, let me refute a statement that Mr. May made. I voted for the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, which provides tax incentives for those homeowners and for those businesses who not only are LEED certified, but who weatherize their homes as well. On that point, what Mr. May represents is a step toward regression and reversion. We represent a step going forward. The Republican agenda seeks to privatize Social Security. Right now, in the midst of our economic downturn, there are Hoosiers in Marion County, there are Hoosiers in Clinton County, there are Hoosiers in Vandenberg County, whose only source of income is Social Security. Imagine under the Bush administration, had we privatized Social Security right at the brink of our economic downturn, the worst since World War II, where would our seniors be left with? What would they have? They wouldn't have anything because we would have left our investments to the whims of Wall Street and our seniors would be left with a blank check. And so I support Social Security. I think we should bolster Social Security, and it begins with collapsing the war effort. If we collapse the war effort, which has already toppled $1 trillion, we could use that capital put back into our U.S. Treasury to bolster Social Security.
Rebuttal, Mr. May.
Certainly. One thing that I'd like to start out with, Mr. Carson says what I represent. Let me tell you what I represent. I represent some common sense solutions here. Social Security is going broke. We need to modify. I have never said privatize. I have always said modify. Modification begins with understanding that it is going broke. It is already broke. Already more money is being spent than is coming in. That is the definition of going broke. So I would support reforming based on age, making sure that those seniors who are 55 and above get everything that they have been promised, but grading those below.
Next question is for Mr. May. During the first presidential debate, Governor Romney said he wanted to turn the Title I program, which provides educational services for students of low-income families, into a voucher program, allowing parents to use the money to attend any school. Do you support Governor Romney's plan? And if so, how would it help improve education for low-income families in our district?
I support a portion of his plan. This is what I support at its most basic. I support educational reform that puts the student first, not the teachers, not the administrators, not the taxes that go into those things, but the students. So I would look at a plan of allowing more control to be returned to the states and, more importantly, to local municipalities and local communities. You know, the Department of Education is very fond of setting specific guidelines, specific rules and regulations that apply not to the student, but more to the administrators that then have to pass that on to the student. One excellent recent example, a state superintendent down in Texas was just arrested and will in all likelihood go to jail because he was trying to conform to what President Obama and those before him have done in terms of education reform. He was purposefully keeping kids out of school so that they wouldn't come in and take the test to artificially increase the amount of test scores that were deemed to be sufficient and passing. Why? So that he could keep his bonus. Now, I want to control education from the state level up, basically from the ground up, not from the top down. So, very simply, federal government can regulate the standard by which we measure a student. The example, if you're in third grade and you do not read at a third grade level, you don't get to go to fourth grade. But I let the teachers and the local municipalities here decide the mechanisms by which they're going to teach, what they're going to teach, and how they're going to teach it. We can set the standard at the federal level. We don't have to set the details. Who best than Hoosiers to teach Hoosiers? Not some party leader out of D.C.
Time. Rebuttal, Congressman Carson.
I certainly think that we need a national standard, but the reality is very clear, Amos. In many local municipalities and in many states, our educational system has failed. I look at the incidences across the country where our high schools are graduating, nearly 50% of the graduating class, arguably around 39%, are functionally illiterate. There is a fundamental problem at the ground level as it relates to our children and the lack of them getting the necessary building blocks that they need.
Time. Next question goes to Mr. May. On your website, in talking about health care, you say 350 million citizens is America's population. But as of today, the estimated population of the U.S. is 314.6 million, a figure that includes citizens and non-citizens. Mm-hmm. And that brings up immigration. If elected, what would be your position on those here illegally? And what do we do about the children of illegals who were born in this country? Would you send them back to their parents' country?
No, this is an easy one. We need immigration reform, not just to take into account the lives of everyday people that are here in Indianapolis, but also just to the waste and inefficiency. You know, there are dozens of different types of visas. If you have someone who wants to come to this country to better their life and they are uneducated, I don't mean stupid, I mean uneducated. They don't know how to read, or maybe they're not sure what form to fill out. Basically, we have a system that makes it difficult for them to come into this country legally. So what I propose is a first step, not an end solution. What we have heard from both parties really is an end solution. We want to see this or we want to see that. Here's what I would do. Let's start with the two demographics that we know we can find, we can locate, and we can help immediately. First is the criminal class. I don't mean those that crossed the border illegally. I mean those that came across illegally and are now committing crimes, rape, murder, robbery. The second classification would be for those children. Our entire system of criminal justice is based off of the concept of intent. How can a three-month-old who doesn't have the intent to poop in their diaper intend to cross a border illegally and leave a country of origin? They don't. We need to take that into account. So I would look at two classes first. And again, this is just a first step. Once we reach the first, we go to the second. I'd look at the criminal class. They're in our jails right now in Marion County. We can lock them up. We can say, do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Send them back to their country of origin. For those students, for those children brought over by their parents who had no fault of their own, we need to make sure we give them the opportunities to succeed in this country instead of forcing them to make bad decisions.
Rebuttal, Congressman Carson.
I'm a proud co-sponsor of the DREAM Act. We cannot blame children for the unlawful actions and decisions by their parents. All children raised in America deserve a chance at the American dream, and we must provide a fair pathway to citizenship. I signed the Indiana Compact because I believe we absolutely and positively need humane immigration reform in this country. We can't support laws that presume guilt for Latino Americans or any Americans of any race, but
time.
I support the President's decision for deferment action.
Question goes to Congressman Carson. Population growth in this city and in the 7th District in the past decade was in part because immigration from Burma and Latin America and Africa and Europe, immigrants settled in Indianapolis. Many arrived legally, others illegally. If elected, what will you do to help solve the immigration issue that has caused deep concern among many in the community?
Again, as I said before, America was built on the backs of immigrants. I propose, as does President Obama, that once those folks graduate, whoever graduates from college with a graduate degree or higher, they should have a visa attached to it. We rank number 39 internationally in terms of innovation and growth. We need a greater investment in STEM programs, science, technology, engineering, and math. We will never be the great country that we were born to be without embracing our immigrant population. It doesn't mean that we don't have critical national security concerns. It doesn't mean that there aren't trafficking concerns that we must address and folks who are here illegally. It's unrealistic to ship 12 million people out of this country. But what I will say is this. We have to stand behind President Obama's DREAM Act, as I do. We have to forcibly stand and sign on to Indiana's compact, which I've already done. And we have to embrace all that America means. I was just with a group of South Asian Americans this weekend, and they too are encouraged about the possibilities of what it means to be an American. They're physicians, they're engineers, they're attorneys, and they want a brighter future for their children who are second-generation immigrants. And I think that until we have legislators like myself who boldly stand behind the president with these measures, we'll never be the country that God has meant us to be.
Rebuttal, Mr. May.
A couple of points. First off, you heard him use words like forcibly sign on to, must follow. I don't want to force people to do anything. I want them to be swayed by a logical and sound common sense argument and sign on from a position of I want to, not I must. But I do agree with the congressman that we need immigration reform. Absolutely. That's why I'm the only one who has proposed an actual solid approach to begin the process of this. And he talked about the STEM. He voted against that. That hurts folks in Decatur Township at the Purdue Research Extension Park.
I did not vote against it. Amos, I know you're loving this now, but if I'm not going to get the rebuttal, let's do it. All right.
Behave.
All right.
This is, obviously, this is a debate. 7th District Congress, Congressman Andre Carson, Carlos May on WTLC AM Indianapolis. Next question is directed to Congressman Carson. Given the need to reduce the deficit, how can we cut federal spending when those listening to this debate want whoever is elected to bring back more federal spending to the 7th District?
Listen, as I stated, Dr. Brown, in my opening statements, since I've been in office in just over 4.5 years, I've been able to bring back over $500 million. I'm a supporter of earmarks. I don't believe that we should waste taxpayer dollars to study the mating habits of butterflies, but I do believe that earmarks are necessary. Since I've been in office, we've been able to secure those folks at Amtrak. They were threatened with over 100 jobs being lost. Not only did we help save those 100 jobs, we helped Amtrak hire 50 more workers. When IPS threatened to lay off numerous teachers, I voted for the Recovery Act and worked with President Obama in making sure those teachers kept their jobs. We helped create the Cultural Trail, which is going to empower a lot of small businesses, minority-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, veterans-owned businesses to spur economic growth. A lot of the resurfacing efforts that we're seeing in the city now is a result of the votes that I cast in support of the American Recovery Act. Now, it has Mayor Ballard's name on it, but they're forgetting to put Congressman Carson's name on it, but that's okay because I want to see Hoosiers benefit first. And having said that, Carlos May talks about the fact that we are a donor district and 78 cents of our dollar goes outside of the country. Well, outside of the city. It sounds like he, like me, supports earmarks. And so I think that we need to have a greater drive towards solidifying the relationship that members of Congress have with advocating on behalf of their districts, and that's what I'll continue to do.
Rebuttal, Mr. May.
Certainly a few points. First to the last, it's not that I said 78 cents gets sent out. What I said was, about every dollar that we send out, we only get 78 cents back. I want to make that equal. I want parity. A dollar out, a dollar in. A few other points. He talks about cutting spending. August 2, 2012, H.R. 6169, pathway to job creation, voted no. May 31st, 2011, increasing the debt limit, voted yes. And this was a vote on a motion to suspend the rules. So he didn't even want to follow the rules. He just wanted to vote to say, yes, let's spend more money. That's unfortunate.
Time. As you are hearing, this is not like the debate you see on television. This is fast-moving, and I'm sure the live bloggers have already gotten their fingers sore from trying to live tweet and live blog. But let me follow up on spending, a question next for Mr. May.
Certainly.
Nearly everyone in the district agrees that we must cut the federal deficit and reduce federal spending. So give me some specific examples of federal programs you would cut if elected.
First, I would look to the waste and fraud. The GAO, the Government Accountability Office, just put out a study a few months ago that said they basically couldn't find, they had lost between $70 to $100 billion. Now, the point is not how much they lost because it was a lot. The point was they didn't even know if it's between 70 or 100. $30 billion is a huge, huge amount that they don't even understand where it went. So first is to institute programs that are going to eliminate fraud and waste. Things such as Six Sigma, which works. It's proven to work. It helps. That's one point. The other point is very common sense. We'll look at the defense. You know, we are spending money and we are paying contractors to develop weaponry and programs that they have not yet given us. I don't know of any business that allows you to operate by you continue to pay them and you get nothing from them. I would immediately halt payments on that. Third is we can look at foreign aid. I would tie in foreign aid and how much we distribute to whether or not the country that we distribute it to allows us to implement security measures that are best for our embassies, for our people abroad, for our ambassadors, and for our national security folks. I mean, these are common sense approaches that can work. The problem is most politicians, once they get into office, make decisions based off of one thing, fear of losing the next election. So they will do and say whatever it takes. Tax reform is another thing. We could look at tax reform. But unfortunately, politicians are more want to create a new deduction or a new loophole as opposed to actually going to the root cause, scrapping what we have and starting new.
Time. Rebuttal, Mr. Carson.
I've stated very clearly that we must forcibly, boldly collapse the war effort. We've toppled $1 trillion. We also need to look at selling off some of our unused federal assets. The United States of America owns over 25% of the land. I think that's too much. At best, we should lease the land. And even further than that, we should sell off our unused federal assets and put that money back into our U.S. Treasury to make smart investments and capital infusions to spur economic growth.
Let me move to another question, starting with Mr. May. Mm-hmm. A quarter, 23.7% of those living in the 7th Congressional District who are employed don't have health insurance. Could you explain why repealing the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare some would call it, will allow those thousands of people in our district to be covered by health insurance?
I'm glad you asked that. I want to be very precise on this. Do I want to repeal Obamacare, as the president himself called it? Yes. But, again, common sense can prevail here. There are certain aspects of that bill which are phenomenal, that are good, that people like, and that we should keep. Like keeping your kids on your insurance until they're 26, or if you're a parent who doesn't have insurance and you've got a child under the age of 17, to be allowed to give them insurance, or uncapped liabilities. My entire point to this, which I have said from the very beginning, and I was the first congressional candidate to mention this, is that our healthcare decisions are best left to Hoosiers. By Hoosiers, for Hoosiers. Not a party leader from California in D.C. telling us what is best here in the 7th District. Now, the program that I talk about, that I always talk about, is the Indiana State Healthcare Compact. This is something that is constitutionally allowable according to Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution, but more importantly, it is something that provides common sense solutions. If we have Hoosiers dictating and determining what is best for Hoosiers, we will be better off. The president, his bill, Obamacare, came in. Even the governor said, if this is passed, if this is instituted, we're going to have to get rid of programs that are fiscally sound, fully funded, and that people like the Healthy Indiana program. I mean, so many people are going to go off of that. So it's not that I don't want health care at all. What I want is to make sure that the health care is driven locally, not federally. It's common sense.
All right. The next rebuttal.
I'm reminded in 2010 when Mr. May led a group of Tea Partiers in front of my office to protest the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare. Listen, the states have had over 200 years to figure out our health care challenges, and they have failed to do so. So we set a national standard. Those seniors who have complained to me about not being able to pay for their prescription drugs once they hit the donut hole, they're covered by 50%, and that's closing more and more each and every day. Kids can stay on their parents' insurance program
Time.
Until they're 26.
I want Congressman Carson, though, to answer the same question that I just asked Mr. May. Could you explain how the Affordable Care Act would enable those who work in the district, we're talking about people that are employed,
yes,
but don't have health care, to be able to get it?
The Affordable Care Act now allows for all Americans to get covered. If you cannot afford insurance on your own, there is a pathway for you to get insurance through the government. It's income specific, and it allows you to get coverage. And so I think it's comprehensive at best. It's not as far-reaching as I would have wanted. I wanted a single-payer system. Hopefully we can get to that. But in 2014, Amos, the government will create a pilot program that will make it that much more affordable for, if you don't like Anthem, if you don't like Cigna or whoever you're on, it will allow you to sign up for this government-sponsored program that will also inject competition into the marketplace to force other insurance companies to lower their costs. That way all Americans can get covered. But if you do have a job and you can't, and your job doesn't provide insurance, it's income specific, and you can still get coverage under the Affordable Care Act.
Rebuttal, Mr. May.
Yeah, first point. Did 2 years ago I lead a group of people to the congressman's office? Yes, absolutely, and here's why.
And they were Tea Partiers, right?
Yeah, they were Tea Partiers. They were independents. They were libertarians. They were a whole group of people,
but
not
the time,
just
there
Tea Partiers.
I'm coming.
Can I get my 30 seconds still?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Thank you.
Reset.
So, first point to that. Yes, I did lead a group of people, but it was not just Tea Partiers. It was a lot of different folks. Second point, I was going against it for the reasons I just stated. I didn't want it run from the federal government. I wanted it run from the state governments. Third point to that, I did that because you held a healthcare town hall that you didn't even bother to attend. I attended. There were six people there. Aaron Rosenberg, your legislative director at the time, was the person who ran it. So you didn't even have the decency to show up to your own town hall.
So
you're calling me and you're calling your former legislative director, Aaron Rosenberg, a liar.
I didn't call Aaron Rosenberg a liar.
You just said it's untrue.
You're being misleading, and you know you're being misleading.
We can ask Aaron. I've known her since high school.
I've known her since she was a child. It doesn't matter.
Gentlemen, let us.
The facts are clear, Amos.
Well, hold on. Then take it when I do the next question. You can take a little bit of how you handle 90 seconds there. Congressman Carr said, when our program was broadcast from the American Legion National Convention that was held here in Indianapolis, I, quite frankly, was stunned at the high unemployment rate of our veterans who've served in Iraq and Afghanistan. What must our government do to make sure our veterans who want to work are able to find meaningful employment?
That's a great question. Right now, there are tax incentives available for businesses to hire vets. The sad reality is that community leaders and stakeholders and legislators and elected officials aren't making a great enough push to make sure our service members have access to employment after they've served our country honorably. We saw this same situation post the Vietnam War effort. And my fear, Amos, is that as much as our vets have sacrificed to keep our country safe, that we don't have the capacity to get them employed once they return home from duty. One of the bills that I mentioned that President Obama signed into law is a bill that requires the military to teach financial literacy exit counseling before our service members and troops are released from their tours of duty and from their service with the military. What this will help them with is not only does it allow them to make sound financial decisions once they integrate back into the workspace, but it allows them to be a greater asset to any future employer who not only hires a very skilled worker, but who also takes advantage of the numerous tax incentives that are out there to hire our troops.
Mr. May, rebuttal.
Veteran affairs is very important and near and dear to my heart. My dad was in the military. My grandfather and great uncles were all in the military, World War II, amongst other military engagements. But to the point here, there was a young man recently in the newspaper. His first name is Zachary. I won't mention his last name, but he was involved in a shootout at one of the liquor stores here. He emailed me saying, I contacted Congressman Carson's office. I waited for a response. Nothing. His sister had to contact Congressman Rokita's office out of the district to get help. True accessibility means you will help everyone, regardless of their station in life, and you will make it a point to do so.
Mr. May, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, one in seven persons in the workforce in the 7th District was unemployed. If elected, what will you do to get more of those living in our district employed?
As I stated in my opening, government needs to create the proper economic climates so that small, medium, and large-sized businesses can expand and grow. Right now, we have a tax code that forces small businesses and medium businesses to make decisions based off of one thing. What is the tax implication of my decision? Not what is best for my customer, my client, my product, my consumer, but what is the tax implication? So here's what I'd look at. Small business regulatory reform. Right, and I guess I should step back. The reason I focus on small and medium-sized businesses is that they are the economic engine of this nation. Too often, the tax implications are left and are benefiting large corporations. We need to get back to the small and medium-sized business owners. My parents have been small business owners for over 20 years. So, reforming the tax code. Small business regulatory reform. On average, small manufacturers pay $28,300 per employee. That's 125% higher than a large manufacturer. That's ridiculous. Where is the common sense there? You know, Congressman Carson voted in the Regulatory Flexibility Improvements Act. He voted no. Donnelly voted for it. Even Donnelly was willing to know that, hey, this is something for Indianapolis. Point being, Congressman Carson votes 93% of the time with Nancy Pelosi. I will never vote 100, 93, 95, I will vote for what is best for this district, this state, and this nation, not what is best for a party or an individual such as myself. It's the tax mechanism. It's strengthening the manufacturing center. It's diversifying energy policy. It is a whole rubric of things. It's not just one thing. It's a totality of it.
Time.
Well, Amos, I think tax reform is critical. The measures that I have voted for, I can stand absolutely 100% behind these measures. I voted for measures that not only save the auto industry, but I voted for measures that offered a series of capital infusions into our district that has lowered our unemployment numbers, and I'm proud to stand behind those. I think Mr. May is being misleading when he talks about me backing Speaker Pelosi or former Speaker Pelosi. What we've done with this Congress is have saved America from an economic destruction.
Next question is for Mr. May. Mr. May, on your website, you say that you will, quote, stand for states' rights, end quote.
Absolutely.
But the concept of states' rights reminds many who are listening to us right now of a time when states denied American citizens their constitutional right to vote, freely assemble, get an education, live, work, and play where they wanted. In short, under states' rights, they couldn't exercise their full rights as Americans. What exactly do you mean by states' rights, and how is that different from states' rights in the 19th and 20th centuries?
States' rights back then were dictated by states' legislatures. Specifically, they were controlled by Southern Democrats. They were the ones that instituted the Jim Crow laws. They were the ones that fought the civil rights movement. It was folks like Martin Luther King Jr., a Republican, who fought for it. Now, to that point, that becomes a human issue. Human issues need to be determined, or at least a standard should be set at the federal level. However, what I mean by states' rights is things like allowing the states to run education, allowing the states to run healthcare, or at least, if we don't want them to completely run it, to have a much larger hand in running them. That way, it's not the federal government, a small group of people out of D.C. telling us here what to do. It is Hoosiers telling Hoosiers what to do. If there is some fight between the specific enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 10 to the federal government and Article 1, Section 9, Section 10 and the 10th Amendment to the state governments, now we can have a federal discussion on that. But primarily, look, this is the Constitution. This is what got us to where we are today. It made us the greatest nation on this planet. And it wasn't because for the entirety of our history we had a national government and a few small select group of individuals at the national government telling everybody what they're going to do, when they're going to do it, and how they're going to do it. I'd like to point on one prior statement, though, the auto industry that the Congressman Carson so apt said he voted for. That hurt someone like Mike Lethick over at Stans Auto Electric, an institution for over 40 years on the east side. He could no longer run secondary parts because the cash for clunkers ruined that secondary market. He no longer had the clientele that he did, nor the employees that he did.
Rebuttal, Congressman Carson?
He's trying to get away from states' rights. Let me be clear. Our states are laboratories for democracy. However, if states were allowed to be autonomous without any accountability, we would have seen the segregation remaining in a state like Alabama, where President Dwight Eisenhower had to send U.S. Marshals in to integrate the schools. And there are numerous examples where the federal government had to intervene because states were running amok. And so I think we need a national standard while allowing states to be the creative
time.
Ingenuity and...
Let me address next question to Congressman Carson. You were the only representative from Indiana this year to co-sponsor support for additional dollars to be spent with the Second Chance Act to fund programs to help ex-offenders find meaningful employment. Given efforts to cut the budget, why should funding for the Second Chance Act remain and be expanded?
We have people in our society, Dr. Brown, who have certainly made mistakes and who have gone to jail or prison. But within their stay in these institutions, there has been a renewal, there has been a renewing of the mind, they've repented, and they're wanting to come back to society to make a positive contribution. I don't think that anyone who has ever made a mistake in his or her life should be penalized for the rest of their lives by public opinion for a mistake that they've made. And so what we've done is we've allowed the Second Chance Act, sponsored by me, introduced by my friend in Chicago, Danny Davis, to allow those persons who have made mistakes to get back into the workforce and make a positive contribution. I also introduced another bill that deals with reentry. Typically, when a person is released from prison, Amos, they have to wait about 3 to 6 months before their benefits kick in. What this bill does, it allows their benefits to kick in immediately so we don't have those persons recidivate back into a life of crime and cause trouble. So we want to incentivize those persons who want to go back and have the structure in place to provide tax incentives, which are already there, for companies to hire these people.
Rebuttal, Mr. May?
Certainly. You know, Congressman Carson and I agree for the most part on this. We do need to give folks a second chance. You know, for the 4.5 years I was on the mayor's, Mayor Ballard's administration, I worked with the director of reentry. But it's not just about what programs can we institute at the time of their incarceration. It's also afterwards. And afterwards is where we need, again, to look at the totality of the circumstances. Economic reform, allowing small and medium-sized business owners to make up their own mind. They want to hire workers. The problem is they have no incentive to do so based off of the tax code right now. So it's a totality
time.
Of it.
Time. Next question is for Congressman Carson. Many in the district wish we'd leave Afghanistan now and not wait till 2014. Others are concerned with the situation in Iran, that Iran shouldn't have nuclear weapons and that the United States should go to war if necessary to stop that. Your views on Afghanistan withdrawal and how should we deal with Iran?
I've supported the withdrawal for quite some time right now. It is true that there are extremist elements in Afghanistan that have to be dealt with appropriately. I initially supported a smaller contingency of Special Forces unit to go in and deal with the situation. But it's clear that we have an excess of amount of troops in that region. And I think that not only do we want our troops back home, but we want our resources back home. We've already spent over $1 trillion with the war effort in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and the money is growing more and more. Now I'm deeply concerned with the recent announcement of minerals that our U.S. military might be used as a security force for big business and corporate interests to help these entities mine the resources, where the American small business structure doesn't benefit from this, the Afghan people don't benefit from this, and we only see more and more wealth creation at the top. I'd love for us to get those dollars back into our U.S. Treasury so we can help Indiana small businesses grow, so we can help our broken educational system grow, and so we can rebuild our infrastructure in this country and not build the infrastructure of Afghanistan or support a structure and a corrupt regime.
Rebuttal, Mr. May?
Certainly. You know, walk softly but carry a big stick. We need to let these folks know that at times we are not to be trifled with. At the same time, though, you got to recognize that do we need to be in these countries forever? Absolutely not. It is time to start a drawdown. I don't think it's wise to say a specific date. If internally we want to set a specific date for our troops and for our politicians to know, awesome, perfect, I'm all for that. But to announce a specific exit date to enemies that hate us, that want to kill us, and say, you know, just wait a few more months, we'll be out of your hair, and then you can get back to it.
Time.
That's not the way to do it.
Next question is for Mr. May. The next 7th District Representative will have a say on two major projects requiring millions in federal funds. One is building I-69 through Perry Township. The other is any major mass transit project the legislature and voters in the area may approve. What is your position on using federal transportation money to finish I-69 in Perry Township and for any mass transit reform in the Indy area?
Well, specifically for mass transit, I'm a proponent of mass transit. I think mass transit is good. I think we need it. You know, we talk about a brain drain here in Indianapolis and in Indiana, for that matter, where we have kids that we educate all the way through college, but then they leave because the amenities that they want are no longer here. But it's not just about the college student. It's also about the low-income worker who might not have a vehicle or who uses public transportation. So we need to expand and broaden. I would certainly be welcome to work with the Mayor Ballard in driving this discussion at the federal level. I have no problem with asking to be on the Transportation Committee to discuss these certain things. But in terms of spending federal dollars locally, I would want to create a separate pot of money. Federal highway dollars should go to federal highways, state highways, interstates. Federal highway dollars should not go to mass transit. So I would look at some specific things. If you're a city or a municipality of over 500,000 people, now you can can kind of buy into it. Now it's, yes, I am able to get some money out of this, but it's not just give me the money. It's let's create public-private partnerships to see where we get this money from, where the best source of our funding is, and also because we're looking at only $500,000 or above, if the people want it, they should certainly be able to have it, but it's up to them to understand taxes might go up because of the cost of holding this. So it's a matter of looking in both directions, using highway dollars for highways for what it's intended, using local dollars and public-private partnerships for mass transit here in Indianapolis, which I support.
Rebuttal, Congressman Carson.
I think it's absolutely imperative that we have an investment in mass transit. That could come from federal dollars. We also need to have an honest discussion about the creation of a light rail system. Might that mean that we need to get buy-in or possibly create a commuter tax from the donut counties? Possibly. But Indianapolis, Indiana is a world-class city, and we should act as such. I think that we could stand to see in the next 10 to 15 years a subway system here.
Time. Next question goes to Mr. May. Kind of continues on the same vein of transportation. Mr. May, some have criticized federal grants that have come to Indianapolis, saying those grants didn't provide jobs to people living in the 7th District. If elected, how would you ensure that some of the jobs created by federal grants go to people who actually live in our 7th District?
Well, jobs that are within the 7th District are just as important as people that live in the 7th District. So I would look at something that is going to do two things. One, yes, look at the folks that work here, but also look at those small and medium-sized businesses that will have something, anything, or a lot to say about public transportation and make sure that they settle right here in the 7th District. I would look at places like the old airport, which is currently off of the tax rolls, which we could utilize. Decatur Township, I would certainly focus on Decatur Township. You know, they've got the Ameriplex area. They've got the Purdue Research Extension area. They've got a massive amount of land that could be brought onto the tax rolls by creating incentives for businesses to locate here. So it's not just a matter of saying we have to reserve jobs for folks that live here. It's twofold. Yes, we want folks that live here to have jobs, absolutely. But we also want them to be working here. So it's one thing to say, you know, John Smith, you've got a job, you live here in Indianapolis, but your job is 45 minutes away in Lafayette or in Carmel or Greenwood, somewhere else. I want it twofold. I want the jobs to go here in Indianapolis, right here in the district, but I also want the people that live here to have access to those jobs. And so that's where we start to look at current infrastructure that we have in place. Current infrastructure that we have in place right now would be like the airport, like Ameriplex Parkway, like the east side of town, like the new development on 16th Street. All of these locations are locations within the district that up until now really are just kind of left by the wayside.
Time. Rebuttal, Congressman Carson.
I think it's important that we make sure that those who are paying tax dollars out of the 7th Congressional District see a benefit as a result. No investor is going to make an investment without seeing a yield on his or her risk capital. And so as investors and as taxpayers, it's critical that we see our money used appropriately. That's where the controversy comes in with many of the TIF districts. If we're going to pay our tax dollars, we should see an immediate result and a tangible result, not have our money shifted all across the state and country.
Next question is for Congressman Carson. 7th District is the most racially diverse congressional district in Indiana, but you've been accused by some of favoring only one racial group in the district and that you don't care about the district's other racial groups. How do you answer that concern?
Well, I think it's a mistake. I mean, the 7th Congressional District is a diverse district. Its African-American population is around 26-27%. We have a growing Latino community. We have a sizable Asian-American community. And the rest of the district is represented by white brothers and sisters. If you look at my staff, you will see very clearly that the staff is representative of the congressional district, both here and in Washington, D.C. Listen, when I fought to bring back dollars to the 7th Congressional District, Beech Grove benefited. Perry Township benefited. Center Township benefited, Pike Township, Washington Township, Wayne Township, Decatur Township, all benefited as a result of this. I represent all people, and I make no mistake about this. I was taught that way by my grandmother, Julia Carson. It was reaffirmed by my mother, Tanya Carson, and I'll continue to do so. The difficulty that I have is when you have someone like Mr. May go on a radio station like Greg Garrison, and he attempts to reinforce negative stereotypes about African Americans and minorities, and Mr. May sits there and laughs with him, I caution him that he should learn the lessons of history, that even though people may hate you, no matter how much you try to make them laugh and join in their mockery and scorn, they're going to hate you at the end of the day just the same.
Time. Rebuttal, Mr. May.
Well, I've certainly lived it. I'm a mutt, put plain and simple. I've got my folks come from Scotland, Germany, Spain, and Mexico. So like most Americans, I am descended from many. But to the point that Mr. Carson only reaches out to those demographics that suit him, that's indicative on the fact that this is the only location that he agreed to have a debate on. One in each township, one on multiple shows. Amos, when you ask me to come on, I immediately say yes. When Mr. Garrison asks Mr. Carson, it's a no response. I immediately went on Latino radio stations. Nothing from Mr. Carson. I have gone out to every township to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to hear me.
You know, Mr. May has complained about this for quite some time. I guess he thinks Amos and your listeners aren't good enough.
It's amazing how the Lord works. It may be the next question allows you to respond to that, because your opponent has accused you of ignoring the people in the district, especially the new residents of the district on the south side, by not appearing with him at several community events. How do you answer that? It's amazing how the Lord works. How did you answer the criticism that you've not been visible and available to every and all parts of the district?
I am all over the place. Mr. May wants to have 19 debates. I'm busy doing the work of a congressman. The president hasn't had 19 debates. The senators haven't had 19 debates. The gubernatorial candidates haven't had 19 debates. Listen, Carlos May wants to use this as a platform to run for city council or countywide office, whatever he wants to do. If he's serious about having an honest discussion about the issues, I'd love to do it. I want to do it. I am unafraid. Anyone who knows me knows that I speak boldly and proudly from the positions I stand. But I'm not going to let him use this race as a WWF wrestling match where he can pay for airtime to falsely accuse me of not wanting to debate, where he can use this as a platform to get his name out there, to do a favor for the Republican Party, so he can one day run for what he really wants to run for, and that's treasurer or city council or whatever.
Rebuttal, Mr. May.
I don't want to run for anything. I'm running now because I want to do something, not be somebody. Now, to the point, 19 debates, I never asked for that. I asked for 9, one in each township, and then 3. One on Amos, one on Garrison, and one on a Latino radio station. That's 12. That's 12 hours out of over 2,400 hours out of the past 6 months that we could have met. You have given 1 hour out of 2,400 hours out of 6 months. There could be a lot better. When you say that you want to have a discussion, then why did you not agree to go to the West Side Chamber of Commerce debate, or to the Speedway Neighborhood Association debate, or
Listen, you don't get the call when we debate.
We're almost done. We're getting, come on now. Next question is for Mr. May. In a release you put out today, you talk a lot about increasing manufacturing jobs, but just 10% of those living in our district are employed in manufacturing. By contrast, 25% work in education and healthcare jobs, two industries that could be impacted by congressional budget cuts. If elected, how will you protect these jobs in education and healthcare?
First, I'll listen. I'll listen to what the people need, what they want. I will be the most accessible congressperson in the history of this district, this state, and potentially this nation. That's the first part. You've got to listen to know what the people want and what they need. Second part to that, I do talk about job creation, and I specifically talk about the manufacturing, because our tax system is such that it regulates these industries a lot more than it regulates education or health. The tax code right now is so convoluted, so messed up, so nasty. Politicians get out there, they put a little bit of paint on it, and they say, look what I've done. I created a new deduction, a new loophole, a new exemption. Basically, they benefit large, massive corporations that have an army of tax attorneys to be able to find and utilize those. What about the mom-and-pop store? What about Stan's Auto Electric, Tie-Dye Grill, La Tiendita on West Washington Street that went out of business precisely because of the onus of tax impositions and regulations put onto them? Now, we need to look at all of these. Healthcare, certainly. Education, certainly. Manufacturing, most definitely. But my emphasis on the business side of it will allow opportunities to folks so that they can lift themselves up, that they can go get a job, they can reinvest in the economy. When someone feels better about themselves, they pass that on to their children, which then goes into education. It's, again, this, all of these things are intertwined. They touch each other. To act as though one thing is completely separate from everything else is irresponsible. And it's irresponsible because you're not taking into account how everything is so interconnected. So I would look at all of these things.
Time.
Certainly.
Rebuttal, Congressman Carson.
I think we need a multiplicity of measures to move this country forward. Carlos May constantly slams federal office holders, but yet he wants to be one. Doesn't make sense. Listen, I support the American Jobs Act, which the Republicans refuse to allow any momentum to go forward. What it does is that it penalizes effectively those companies that ship our jobs overseas and still get tax breaks to do so, and it incents those companies who keep the bulk of their operations here in the United States.
Let me give each of you 1 minute, if we'll set 1 minute, to rebut anything the other has said. And I'll start with Mr. May.
Well, I feel like I've done a decent job of rebutting everything he has said already about me. The one thing I'd like to focus on that he just said, you know, I slam federal politicians and then I want to be one. Absolutely right, I slam them. We have an 11% approval rating in Congress. We have folks making decisions based off of what is best for their party or themselves, not what is best for this district, this state, or this nation. And we see that everywhere. We see it from both the Republicans and the Democrats. I'm not picking on any party, I'm picking on all of you. And the reason I want to run for office is because I got sick and tired of listening and of hearing and of seeing all of this stupidity, to be quite frank, at the federal level. It is time to get folks in there with some common sense who want to do something, not be somebody. Now, I know this for a fact. I cannot please 100% of the people 100% of the time. I'm not going to try. Nor do I want to be in office for the rest of my career. I want to get in there, do a job, and if after 6 or 8 years I can't get anything done, it's time for me to step back and let the next person come on in.
Time, Congressman Carson.
I think Mr. May is well-intentioned, but he shows a kind of naivete that troubles me. And that kind of naivete and arrogance comes from a standpoint where he says we need common-sense people in public office, as to suggest that the 435 members of Congress have no common sense, and he's coming in as the savior to correct the issue. The reality is clear. I've had the opportunity to work across the aisle with Republicans who helped get my legislation through in Congress and signed by the president. I've had the opportunity, Amos, to sit with them. And at the end of our discussions, they've even said to me, you know, Andre, we would love to do more with the Democrats, and we would love to work with you more, but we are held hostage by the Tea Party as within our own caucus. After this election, our hope is for us to work with Democrats like you, Andre, to get more legislation through. That's what I represent. That's what I stand for. And if you vote me into office, I will continue to speak boldly on behalf of Hoosiers.
We will take a break. Everybody will take a deep breath. Those that are live tweeting will have an opportunity to rest their fingers. We'll be back with closing statement. It is the debate. 7th District, Congressman Andre Carson, challenger Carlos May. It's a special edition of Afternoons with Amos. And tomorrow, the school board candidates for Pike Township. A passel of candidates from Pike Township in both our 1 and our 2 o'clock hour. It's Afternoons with Amos. The debate after these. All right, welcome back. It is the debate. It's now time for closing statements, and by agreement, we begin with Carlos May.
Well, first off, thank you again for having us on. I appreciate the opportunity and the time. I'd like to let you know why I want to be your congressperson. It's not because I want to be somebody. It's because I want to do something. It is time to have folks in office that make decisions based off of what is best for this nation, this state, and this district, not their party and not themselves. Mr. Carson claims to be bipartisan, yet 93% of the time he votes with his party. That's not bipartisanship. He also stated that I want to come in as a savior. No, I don't. He says that I'm the only one out there talking about how Congress is bad. No, I'm not. 9 out of 10 Americans say the same thing, so I'm one of those 9 out of 10. I want to talk about and close with accessibility. The definition of the job, as I've stated, is in the title of the job. You're a representative. Debates, town halls, public office hours, all of these things point to accessibility. Here's what I mean when I say I want to be the most accessible congressperson ever. It's a 4-point plan. First is open office hours. Anytime I am in the district, there will be set open office hours, no appointment needed. Come on in and talk to your congressperson. Number two, I will have a town hall meeting every single month I'm in office, one in each township, and in December, since we've already gone through, maybe even November, on the radio to get everybody a chance to listen. Third point, I will have congressional liaisons. When I'm not in the district because I need to be in Washington, D.C., you will still have someone representing me at your neighborhood association meetings, at your business association meetings. Final point to that of the four-point plan is a mobile constituent van. A lot of folks either have they don't have the time or the means to get to a central district office, so I will go to them. We will go to places like the Christmore House, the John Boehner Center, Mary Rigg. All of these things are part and parcel of what is needed to truly represent a district and a constituent. It also means going out and talking to folks that you know do not agree with you. I am willing, able, and happy to do so because that's what the people deserve and demand. It's not because what an opponent in any race does. And I will be the first, should I win, to issue the debate challenge to my opponent.
Closing statement, Congressman Carson.
Dr. Brown, what it is an honor to always come on this show. One thing people know about me is that I'm accessible. And when I can't be there, we have a very capable, talented, and brilliant staff to meet those needs. We don't need to spend taxpayer dollars on a mobile van because we have multiple vehicles that the staffers have, that we go out to homes, we go out to community centers. We've already hosted numerous town hall meetings or forums or symposiums, and we'll continue to do so. Ben Franklin responded to a young lady at the Constitutional Convention when she asked him, "Ben, what do we have, a monarchy or a republic?" Ben looked at her and said, "We have a republic if you can keep it." The question becomes, how do you keep the republic? You keep the republic by being actively engaged in the process. You keep the republic by holding your elected officials accountable. And you keep the republic by making sure you vote people into office, like Andre Carson, who in just under 5 years has brought back $500 million to the 7th Congressional District, who in just under 5.5 years has already had two pieces of legislation signed into law by President Obama, who in just under 5 years has already helped save jobs in Indianapolis, Indiana, from Amtrak workers to teachers to postal workers to police officers and others. What I plan to do in the next 2 years is to not only speak boldly against a Congress that seeks to dismantle the country as we know it and to bolster big business, but I stand and want to stand with my president, if we elect him, and when we will, is to make sure that we get our country back on the path of greatness, that we shore up Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, that we protect our seniors, and that we allow for innovation to put us at number one.
We want to thank both Carlos May and Congressman Andre Carson. This has been intense. If you missed any portion of the debate, you can listen to the replay in about an hour and a half on our website, praiseindy.com. But the best thing you can do to everybody listening is go vote. You can either vote on Election Day, Tuesday, November 6th, or early vote downtown at the City County Building every day now from 8 in the morning until 8 in the evening. And a big thanks to our WTLC AM 1310 team for all their technical and logistical support. I'm Amos Brown. Pike Township candidates tomorrow and maybe some other surprises as well. Something that happened in the court, I got to tell you about possibly tomorrow. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. Again, thanks to our candidates. I'll see you tomorrow live at 1.